Hello, everyone. Welcome to a very special episode of Uncanny Treks. Bob and Matt are revisiting their childhood. We're going back to the 2002 era of Batman Gotham Knights, where noted writer Scott Beatty does a really weird run. And it's issues 33 to 49 of Gotham Knights. I'm Bob in Cascadia. That's Matt in the Southland. Matt, how are you doing this evening?
Doing okay, Bob. Man, this title is all about the Bat family.
You can really see that Scott Beatty kept a lot of things from the Devin Grayson run, right? He keeps the focus on team-ups and the focus on the Bat family relationships. He keeps the thing on weird subplots involving the legal status of the Batman.
He gets very deep into the weeds of making sure that Bruce is a fit father.
Lots of questions about Batman as a father are asked and answered somewhat in this. So it's a strange run, man. Before we dive right in, you have any thoughts or preconceptions about Scott Beatty before we started this?
Not really, Bob. I've read some of his work, but I think this is probably when I was introduced to his work as a child because I owned most of these issues in individual issues.
I'm going to have some questions about that because I remember reading a lot of this, but some of this, I'm like, what is this?
I didn't have all the issues. So I can tell you which ones we didn't have, and you'll probably clear up a lot of things.
It will clear up a lot of things, I'm sure. I think this was also my introduction to Scott Beatty. I believe, am I correct in saying we both thought this was terrible when we were kids? I believe we both did.
Oh, yes, for sure. Because we just didn't like a lot of the changes that were being made and how the drama was set up and affecting our characters. The changes that arose that didn't actually last, but they bothered us at the time.
On revisiting it, I don't hate it as much as I remember hating it. I don't think it's very good comics. But on the other hand, there's interesting things, and just what I remember and what I don't remember is fascinating. I don't think these are good comics, listeners, but I do think they're very interesting comics.
And going back to Scott Beatty, Bob, some of the things he has written, I did pull up a list of what he's written before, and I have read Robin Year One, Nightwing Year One, Batgirl Year One.
He co-wrote those with Chuck Dixon, who we talked a little bit about a couple weeks ago, although I think Beatty was maybe more the main writer on those than Dixon. I read Robin Year One and Batgirl Year One fairly close to when they came out. I had the trades and I probably loaned them to you. And I remember liking those quite a bit.
Oh, yes. And especially like Robin Year One. That was one of my favorites.
I had never read Nightwing Year One, but I read it this week since we were going to talk about this. Nightwing Year One, a couple weird beats in it, but pretty fun.
Speaking of weird beats, let's just dive into these.
Starting off, we had an overarching series, an overarching saga about Bane called Tabula Rosa. So we start off with Tabula Rosa Part Zero and number 33. It's called The Devil You Know. Matt, what goes down in this issue?
Well, Bob, Bane shows up at Wayne Manor while the Bat family takes out three formerly gimmicked criminals.
We still have Brian Boland on the covers for these runs, a abiding theme with Gotham Knights.
Very hit.
Boland, very interesting artist, not necessarily the guy you want to be your monthly superhero comic cover artist, though. He does an interesting job with the cover for this. It's a good cover. And also, we open up, like you say, in the thick of it with Alfred feeding Bane, who's off-panel tea, while also holding a shotgun on him. That's pretty good.
Right, which is reflected on the cover. You've got Bane standing up in a suit with his mask on at Wayne Manor, Alfred pointing a shotgun straight at his face. I like it because in Nightfall, Bane beat the crap out of Alfred, so Alfred's not prepared with his shotgun. He keeps it at his side.
Alfred has suddenly embraced the Second Amendment, it turns out. He doesn't agree with British gun control anymore.
Keeps the gun. Now, Alfred will eventually die, so it didn't work out. And I believe he does die at the hands of Bane. Spoilers for 20-something years later, but just telling you. I mean,
City of Bane.
Yeah.
City of Bane. I don't know if that makes the spoilers better or worse that I've localized it.
I don't know. It's weird. I don't remember reading that issue where he dies by the hands of Bane, so. Did he have the shotgun there? Come on, Alfred.
Not to derail the conversation, but to me, the most shocking thing is that happened, what, in 2018, 2019?
Right.
And he's still dead? That's the most surprising thing to me.
Well, Bob, when you have such a huge Bat family, and didn't your favorite Batman writer go without maybe mentioning Alfred for 6 straight months? Your Broken City guy.
Why are you coming at my dog, Brian Azzarello, like this?
He didn't use Alfred, Bob. He didn't use the character for six straight months.
That's just stupid. You don't have to have Dr. Tompkins or Commissioner Gordon or Alfred or the Robins in every single issue of Batman in every single story. That's precisely why I think it's dumb to kill Alfred, is that if you don't have anything to do with Alfred, you can just not show Alfred, and it's quite fine.
So I think that's where you and general audience are different, Bob. We require to know what's going on with Alfred at all times.
So what you're saying, Matt, is that you need a subplot every year where Alfred is dying from inhaling guano?
I got to have something, Bob. I got to have something with Alfred. Alfred's got to be up to something. Come on. Is Alfred the next character cast after Batman for every film, Bob?
Those are movies. We're talking about comic books. It's different medium.
He's pivotal to the character of Batman. He's necessary.
That's like saying, oh my God, this Spider-Man writer didn't use Aunt May for 6 weeks.
Six months.
Who fucking cares?
All right, Gazzarella just completely forgot to use Alfred altogether. He forgot he was existed. Because
really, the standard you want to do for what's a good Batman comic of, oh, did it check the out? That's insane. That's literally insane.
Alfred is on that checklist. Alfred, batarangs, a cape, those things have to be there.
But in the general Batman audience reader is like some freak who can only get it up if your partner has to hit a very specific set of moves the same way every time. Or it's like how I used to feed my friend's cat before she moved and the cat died. I had to watch the cat jump on the bed. I had to pet the cat and say, good job, Panthro. That was a good job. And then I had to go put the food in the bowl. And if I didn't do all of those steps, if I didn't watch Panthro jump, if I didn't pet Panthro, and then I didn't feed Panthro, Panthro wouldn't eat. That's what you, and according to you, most Batman readers are like.
Bob, I have watched wrestling my entire life. It's the same match over and over again, okay? And I like it that way. In the same way with my Batman comics. I expect Alfred. You know, I expect Cena to do his 5 moves of doom and win. That's the thing. This is how this works. We like the things we like for a reason.
My God.
All right.
Matt, I like Dustin Rhodes showing up on AEW when they have something for him to do, but when they don't, it's just fine that he doesn't.
You don't worry about where he's at?
I don't worry about,
you don't think he's not doing something in the background somewhere?
I assume that the Ring of Honor World Tag Team title is just fine.
Yes.
I just assume. I don't need to know. I don't need to be reassured every week on Dynamite.
Let's talk about a couple of characters they did decide to bring into this issue that I was surprised to see.
Hit me.
Here they are. Signal Man, Corrosive Man, and Kite Man. However, all three of them are without their gimmicks, so you don't know who they are. But thank the Lord, the artist decided to put a little like piece of poster board in front of them when Batman finally does capture them to let me know who they are.
Yeah, you could think the artist or you could think Robin, presumably.
Yeah, Robin did kind of help. He gave you some context clues, but come on. I needed to have it painted out right there for me. And Bob, we've seen a lot more Kite Man lately.
Kite Man's gotten a big push between the Tom King Batman run, and then he has his own animated spinoff of Harley Quinn. I know it's difficult to think back to a time before when Kite Man was the biggest character that DC had, but if you can think back to that huge Kite Man time, do you think you still would have liked him the best of this trio of Kite Man, Signal Man, and Corrosive Man?
Corrosive Man would come in a close second just because I kind of liked his whole gimmick.
So what you're saying is you're really prejudiced against Signal Man.
Signal Man's boring. I've never really understood him.
I did want to briefly shout out the artist on this is Mike Collins, who's a Welsh guy, and he did one of the Babylon 5 comics we covered in another iteration of this podcast.
I vaguely remember the art from that comic, and you know he definitely got the characteristics of the people on the show, right? The actors and actresses. So,
Andy drew Alfred, so Matt's happy.
I'm very happy.
I'd never read Legacy, Matt, which is, I guess, the big crossover appearance of Bane in between Nightfall and No Man's Land. But I guess I do remember Talia spurning Bane as a plot point showing up in No Man's Land and after, but I didn't remember that Bane was so angry after Legacy that he was going on a campaign to destroy the Lazarus Pits. That's an interesting thing that I'd forgotten.
I read Legacy, and it was fine. It was like a next step for Bane. He becomes the new Ubu, and I'm sure that the Dark Knight Rises film, they drew heavily from Bane's interactions with Talia and Ra's al Ghul in this comic.
That's really smart. I didn't think about that at all, but yeah, I bet you're right. That's interesting, the Legacy influence on Dark Knight Returns. I do remember spotting a lot of interesting and little weird comic parallels from Dark Knight Returns in particular back in 2012. I hadn't thought about that one, though. I'd also totally forgotten in this issue, even though read it when we were little, that Batman and Bane go visit Jason Blood. That's pretty interesting.
Yeah, I feel like Etrigan the Demon was showing up all the time during this period. He was never my favorite character. And I always hated when they didn't do the rhyme scheme correct when he was talking.
Matt's a stickler. Matt's like, man, Etrigan the Demon shouldn't discover modernism, shouldn't discover free verse.
Oh, he should be just speaking, and he's a poet and didn't know it.
Rough. Yeah. Matt, do you have an opinion on the Whirly Bats?
They're so late 70s, early 80s, just the look of them. And they're just an action figure accessory. I don't understand their purpose because Batman usually just uses his grappling hook and stuff to get rings to go. But he whips these out. Man, even Bane wears one, which is weird.
Matt, I don't mean this to be as condescending as it sounds, but have you ever been to New York City? One time a Batman commentator, I think it was Chris Sims, said something to the effect of, once you've been to New York City, you understand that the most unbelievable thing about Batman is the Batmobile.
It's hard to get around.
And you could extend that to the Bat cycles too. So I would actually defend the Whirly Bat. I get what you're saying, that it feels a little dated, but I think it's cool and makes sense and definitely makes more sense in an urban context than, say, the Bat cycles or the Batmobile. Although, I guess given the fact that helicopters seem to so often crash and kill famous people, if we want to know what the end of Batman would be, it would just be the crash of a Whirly Bat.
He's wearing a cape with a Whirly Bat, too. This is asking for trouble. I figured at this point, Batman would have like some kind of hovercraft technology. He's got a freaking hollow deck in his Batcave.
Well, do you want to wrap us up for issue number 33, man?
Yeah, Bob. So at the very end of the issue, Bane's exact words are, "Wouldn't you agree, brother?"
So much better in a Hulk Hogan voice. You're right. So yeah. Much better in a Hulk Hogan.
Yeah, Bane may be Batman's brother, guys. That's the whole thing.
You've maybe made me like these issues even more, because this is jumping ahead a little bit. But in 34, speaking of the holodeck, we spend a lot of time on Batman's holodeck in number 34. And we see the hollow Bane having a bunch of Arnold Schwarzenegger one-liners. And it's pretty brutal. It's pretty bad. It's not really imaginative. And I don't think it would have been very imaginative in 2003. But imagining Bane as Hulk Hogan amuses me so much more than imagining Bane as Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Like, something to be really racist.
You think Bane wouldn't be really racist, Matt?
He sure is. But I do find it ironic that Bane was in Batman and Robin, but he wasn't played by Schwarzenegger, even though Schwarzenegger was Mr. Freeze.
Yeah, that is one of those funny little ironies of history.
I like the hollow stuff. And in this issue, you have this scene of Nightwing breaking Bane's back. And Bane's belt buckle breaks, because that was what would happen if you're breaking someone's back. So I thought that was awesome. But it literally is a holodeck. It's so weird. I mean, even the line scheme is the exact same as what you'd see in Star Trek.
That was something I noticed reading through Nightwing Year One and looking back at Batgirl and Robin Year One, is Beatty really likes the training scenes in the Batcave. That's something that comes up a lot in those comics. More Batgirl Year One, and especially Nightwing Year One, than Robin Year One.
So we're talking about issue 34, Skin Trade.
Part one of Tabula Rosa. And what's the summary of that, Matt?
Well, after discovering the shocking news that Bane could be Bruce's brother, the Bat family reflects on this newfound discovery while a new threat is formed and a tattoo artist seeking revenge against her rapist.
We gave Brian Boland a lot of crap about his covers in the prior runs, but I do like this cover. It's a really funny cover. It's a great blurb with Bane and Batman, and then blurb the new dynamic duo, ?
It's really funny because Bane's posing in the background like he's a superhero. That's just what adds to the whole irony of it.
And also, just let me say, God bless Bruce Wayne for being willing to fund avant-garde art. If only actual billionaires were willing to do that.
Well, Bob, do you have any thoughts on this tattoo artist that uses nanite ink to go and kill her rapist?
I don't really have any strong opinions on it. You mentioned that she's one of two antagonists who we've seen this run who get dropped. Although the character whose name I forget, is it Manitoa from last? Yeah, he at least showed up in a Beware the Batman episode that I'd totally forgotten.
Yeah, this is so never makes another appearance outside of Gotham Knights. We do see her later on in this series. We do not see her again in anything outside of Gotham Knights.
Her name is Pix, right?
Pix. And I thought the character was interesting. I do feel that the whole origin piece is detail her rape, which is weird for a comic.
Yeah.
And that, I feel like, was something DC has moved away from. Thankfully, we don't see as much of that.
One of those dilemmas of, on the one hand, it is a part of the human experience, and arguably it shouldn't be off limits. But on the other hand, you get the feeling that comic books, especially comic books in the 90s and the early aughts, went to it a little too easily for motivation and in a really fetishistic way.
I agree. Although I do like the whole gimmick of the nanite ink. I think that's a cool way to take this and run with it, because nanite stuff was so popular back in the early aughts. This was a fascinating way to use it, because you would be actually have a reason to inject it into someone.
It was interesting that they do take some pains, I think more in later issues than this issue, to connect her to the DC villain, the Tattooed Man, who I think was more of a Green Lantern villain. Speaking of political things that I find a little queasy, we've talked about, I like Chuck Dixon's writing, but occasionally these insane right-wing talking points come up in Dixon's writing. And that's the same here with Beatty. If he's has these libels about Marxist guerrillas in Latin America doing a slave trade, and it's, nah, dog, you mean the dictatorships they're fighting. Batista's in Cuba, for example, that's who's doing labor trafficking. It's not the Marxist guerrillas for the most part. And then one other thing I did want to praise about this issue is we see Bane and Batman using finished basement as a euphemism for the Batcave, which I thought was a very funny euphemism.
We did bring that up last issue, but how will they even fix the Batcave? Issue 35.
Part two.
And in this issue, Huntress beats up Batman for working with Bane because she just doesn't like that. He's a hypocrite.
I really like Huntress kicking bats. I really do like Oracle describing Huntress as Batman's least favorite daughter. That really makes me laugh. In some way, the quip comes up Bane Wayne, which really makes me laugh.
Yeah, that's hilarious. I want to point out the training equipment in the clock tower is just a punching bag with a picture of Bane's face, whereas the equipment in the Batcave is the holodeck program. Not very equal in training for the Birds of Prey. We do get Huntress kissing Nightwing in this issue. And a couple of issues ago, we were wondering if they had any relationship.
I was never wondering. I know. You might have been wondering.
I wondered. I didn't have the great knowledge that you have. So when does this happen? Before, after the big, they had sex thing? That was after all that.
No, this had, so there's a Nightwing Huntress miniseries. I want to say in 98. I think it's slightly before No Man's Land that Devin Grayson wrote. Actually, haven't read it, but I know of it pretty well. And they bang in that. But it is very much a hit it or quit it thing.
Just hook up.
The fact that they had hooked up hangs all over their relationship in the Devin Grayson run before this in Gotham Knights. And that's why when Batman's listing off Dick's ex-girlfriends in Gotham Knights in the Devin Grayson run, he lists the main ones he lists are Oracle, Starfire, and Hunter.
Gotham Knights is bringing back the Bruce Wayne as the playboy, not really knowing how to do business. It's like he had the animated series. I do like how he calls up his date from the previous art show in the other issue to get the name of the tattoo artist. That was awesome. That was hilarious. I like it when Bruce Wayne is written that way. He's using his playboy charm to get what he needs to be Batman.
It's a little cruel, but it is funny that we get to see his pleasure at provoking this woman, angering this woman such that he doesn't have to deal with her in the future is pretty amusing.
And the smile on his face is hilarious in the issue.
He's very pleased with himself.
It reminds me of like the Keaton smile from the movies.
Oh, that's a good connection. Issue number 36 is Tabula Rosa, part three. It's called Picks. What goes down in part three, Picks, Matt?
So Batman faces off against Picks and is saved by Bane. One problem I do have with these issues is that the plotting of the art is not very consistent. Characters are not wearing the same outfits that they were in the previous issue. The positioning on the panel is what would happen several minutes after what happened on the other panel. There's missing time. There's just some inconsistencies that drive me insane.
The only thing I really had to say about this issue was we see Oracle and Nightwing stuck in traffic. And they're playing, instead of 6 Degrees of Kevin Bacon, they're playing 6 Degrees of Red B, which is a fun game.
Do you find it very strange? The way that Oracle's portrayed as not being able to use her legs shows so much in these comics. But I don't know if that's a way to show that she's still strong or if it's that she requires help from other people. Which one do you think they're going for here?
I definitely think they're going for the former, but I don't always think it succeeds. And so sometimes it winds up showing the latter.
The whole thing in the car, they could just get her wheelchair out and roll her. Dick doesn't have to carry it. It's not that big of a deal. Why is her handicap becoming such an issue? They want to portray her as strong, but they're just not doing a very good job of it. You see it in a later issue, too, where she goes to confront Bruce in the Batcave and has to climb down this ladder, which we've never seen before. Weird. It's unnecessary.
On to happier things, but I didn't find this next issue very happy. So number 37 is Spoiler Space, which is just a terrible title. But what goes down in Spoiler Space, Matt?
So Batman tests Spoiler's abilities and she fails. That's really all.
This issue infuriated me. The entire premise is Metamorpho is better than Spoiler. I really like Spoiler and I don't like Metamorpho very much. So I was pretty annoyed the whole thing. Do you have any takes on Metamorpho, Matt?
Yeah, I don't really care for Metamorpho because he's overpowered. I've never really read anything with the character. And then I want to read more Metamorpho comics. He's not that kind of character. He just shows up when they need a plot device to fix the problem. With that being said, though, I am not a big Stephanie Brown fan, and I'm starting to understand more and more why they attempted to kill her off in Oregon. Stephanie Brown, to me, is just extra fat on the Bat family that used to go on.
Well, I like her, like I said. In fairness to your point, I don't think she was very well written before they killed her off in War Games, although I haven't read a lot of that Chuck Dixon, Tim Drake series. I don't know how she's used in that. But in stuff like this, I agree with you that she's not used well. But I really like Stephanie Brown because of things like the Grant Morrison one-shot where she's infiltrating the assassin school, or the series where she's Batgirl, or the series where she and Cassie are the Batgirls who work for Oracle. So it's the later Stephanie stuff is why I really like her, where I think later writers knew what to do with her. I agree with you that there's reason she was killed. To go to Metamorpho, I just wanted to say briefly, I've read Batman and the Outsiders and all the Outsiders comics, not that recently, but a couple years ago. I never liked Metamorpho there. Some people do say Metamorpho's Silver Age comics are great. I've never read them and have never been particularly interested in them, but some people do say. And then Al Ewing is doing a current Metamorpho ongoing, which I do mostly like Al Ewing. I don't like everything he does, but I really like what I do like that Al Ewing does. So I'm somewhat tempted to get into Metamorpho because of Al Ewing, but I'm also, Metamorpho sucks. On to issue number 38, Night Moves Part 1, The Queen is Dead.
So Bob, Checkmate attempts to brainwash Huntress into becoming the new Black Queen, while Bruce acts like a dick to a sick Alfred. And I'm just going to say, Bob, that even as a kid, I hated this cover. I didn't own this issue.
So that's okay, that was about to say, this arc is the one I don't think you own, because I don't remember this arc with Huntress and Checkmate at all. It totally blindsided me.
Yeah, I hate this cover, though, because the positioning of her left hand is so awkward. It makes it look like someone with a black glove is trying to grope her. It doesn't look like her own hand.
It's a bad cover. Yeah, you're right.
The night motif is okay once you understand its relation to Checkmate. Helena is in her post-Hush costume in this. So this happens
very much. I recently reread it because I was reading a lot of Question comics. This also is very much a sequel to Batman Huntress Cry for Blood, which have you ever read that?
I have not, no.
Oh, man, we should maybe do that in the future. It's a great comic. I love it. I read it when we were young. I think you'd still like it, but I have strong nostalgia for it.
Well, Bob, to begin the issue off on the second page, we got Bruce decking Alfred with a snowball, so he's already being a dick from the start.
And I bet he loaded that snowball with bat guano so that Alfred gets sick.
It probably did.
I do like some of Roger Robinson's art in this. On page 7, we've got a splash of Helena Bertinelli in a padded sail being held by Checkmate. And for whatever reason, I got some fun Tim Sale vibes off that. And then just to skip to the end, I really did like the last page. It's a very animated series, Bruce Timm style splash page of Helena diving out of the Checkmate skyscraper. I thought both were really good.
I will say that this is one of the better issues that we're covering today. I really enjoyed this issue just because I like the way that she's brainwashed. She thinks she's Helena Wayne for a moment. That's really cool. Yeah. Anytime you can tie in that kind of stuff, it's really neat. The ending's a little weird with her jumping out the skyscraper, but whatever.
And Checkmate using Scarecrow and Mad Hatter to brainwash her is a very cool approach. On the one hand, I agree with you that I really like Helena and I like how she's treated for the most part in this issue. On the other hand, even though I think I'm more pro Checkmate than you, I was not super impressed with Checkmate, this Checkmate story, partially because I didn't remember it and maybe I was hostile to it, but also just, I don't know. Greg Rucka Checkmate series from a couple years after this is very good, I would say, but this stuff is not great, I don't think.
The next issue, issue 39, is called Castling. The quality drops with this issue. Huntress escapes Checkmate and is rescued by Batman. That's really the whole story.
The only thing I liked about this issue, and this is a follow-up to Batman Huntress Cry for Blood, where Question and Huntress become friends, is we have Helena needling Question, asking, is that a new hat?
A couple of things I did want to point out. On page 10, Bruce has an animatronic clay face to fight for some reason in his Batcave, even though he also has a holodeck. He just really likes inventing these things to beat the crap out of.
I don't really feel inclined to defend this, but if I were inclined, I'd be, oh man, Matt, I mean, Clayface is a villain you need to fight in multiple forms.
On page 16, Bob, we see this bat cycle with a sidecar, and Robin has this really cool helmet he's wearing. And I'm, okay, that's neat. He's got a different looking outfit. Then he immediately takes the helmet off to jump out of the sidecar and onto a moving tow truck. Why even wear the helmet to begin with? You're not going to wear it. The issue ends, of course, with Batman taking Helena to a bat bunker, which we know these were built during a Prodigal. We've seen them before in No Man's Land, but we get a chance to really see what the newer ones looks like. All right, Bob, so this finishes up in issue 40 with Checkmate. Batman and Huntress prepare for the bunker to be invaded by Checkmate while Alfred's sickness progresses.
The two things we can say that Scott Beatty really has a thing for continuity cleanup, and he really has a thing for Wayne Manor and or Batcave invasions, doesn't he?
On that Wayne Manor Batcave playset, 95% of my stories focused on the Wayne Manor being invaded. Maybe he had the same problem I did.
Was that playset more of a Batman animated series, or was it more of a Batman Returns?
The one I had was Batman Returns, but they reissued it for every single Batman property. It came out like 10 different times at different color schemes and different stickers. On page 8, we get to see Batman beating up on Huntress, who's already been like beat up. I was, really, Batman? Let her go.
He's the dirtiest player in the game.
Batman is constantly fighting Huntress. It's a weird thing with them. And then on page 12 and 13, we have a shirtless Huntress. And the reason I'm pointing this out is because this is the common thing in these Gotham Knights issues. There's a woman shirtless from behind getting dressed. Or she's shirtless in her bed and you only see the side of her.
Whoever gets Roger Robinson still. Yeah, I think he was doing it on the Devin Grayson issues too.
His favorite go-to, a topless woman from behind.
Might we say it's his required Alfred appearance?
That must be it. Issue 41 is entitled Rubber Soul. And this is really just a filler issue about Matches Malone and the Elongated Man.
Illustrated by Toby Cypress, who, I don't know if you know this, but there's a Deep Space Nine miniseries that I've never read that's supposed to bridge the end of the show and the start of those Deep Space Nine season 8 novels. And he illustrated that, apparently. But I wanted to like this issue. I mean, I love Elongated Man, and I think it's a great premise. It's Matches Malone crashes Sue Dibney at her book signing, and he takes her and Elongated Man out for Chinese. So I thought that was great, but obviously the last issue left us with like dying Alfred cliffhanger. And so this was a really, really strange fill-in issue while Alfred dies.
That sounds a lot like when Hush ended and Broken City took over for 6 months.
No, they're not comparable at all.
I really wanted more of what was going to happen after Hush, but I got Broken City.
I never wanted to see Hush again. B, this is a fill-in issue. Hush or Broken City was an ongoing series. And C, Judd Winnick didn't immediately go back into Hush. You had to read the Scarecrow Hulk arc, so get off your high horse.
Why do these type of issues happen?
It's deadline pressures, I assume.
Okay. Because it really was weird to have this ending of Alfred's going to die, and then here's a fun little issue about Elongated Man to fill your appetite until we get the next piece.
The other thing I felt robbed about this issue 41 is we've been hot and cold on the Brian Bolan cover. I don't think Brian Bolan's a great superhero artist necessarily. I think he's a great artist, but not necessarily a great superhero artist, if that distinction makes sense. But I am just very morbidly curious to know, what does Brian Bolan's Elongated Man look like? I want to know how he would draw Elongated Man, and we do not get that on this cover. I was a little bitter.
I don't know if putting Elongated Man on a cover would show issues, though, Bob, especially after the death of the supposed death of Alfred. Issue 42 is
20 days less one.
What a stupid name. All right. Anyway, Bob, we find out that Alfred is sick because of batshit.
It's also a very strange Brian Bolan cover because Alfred is dying, so we need something that's emotional and, you know, has pathos. So, Brian, draw a cover where Alfred's cleaning. It's very strange.
That's what butlers do, Bob. I mean, what did you think they were going to draw? Him fighting Bane on the cover?
Matt, my theory is you don't have to have Alfred on the cover or in the plot at all if you don't want to. But apparently that's not good for all the other Batman fans that Matt speaks on behalf of.
It sounds to me like Alfred is a very important character, Bob. I'm just saying, he's on the cover of the issue.
So did you like Golden Age Green Lantern filling in for Batman on this comic?
I really did, Bob, especially since it was established in Hush that he was Gotham's first hero.
It was established before Hush. Don't you give Jeff Loeb credit for that.
I did, though, appreciate, Bob, that they did have an appearance by the Atom, who was fighting the infection with a knife. That was pretty cool. Anytime they bring an Atom for these tiny little bits, I love it. It's always cool just to have him show up.
I really don't like the Atom. I don't love the Golden Age Atom, but I much prefer the Golden Age Atom of a short guy who likes to punch people to the Silver Age Atom of a guy who shrinks.
To each his own, Bob. To each his own.
I did have to look it up just because I was curious and I didn't recognize it offhand, but the Shakespeare Bruce is reading to the dying Alf is from Midsummer Night's Dream.
On page 13, Bob, Batman takes his anger out on a Riddler, but it's a post-Hush Riddler, so what did that tell you?
Yeah, he also gets to take a little out on Lex Luthor. He gets to rob Lex Luthor. That was pretty amusing. That was a nice little post-No Man's Land thing. And then we also have something that will pay off later in the series, but we have a social worker showing up and thinking that Bruce Wayne and Cassie Kane just had a night of torrid passion, which on the one hand, inappropriate. On the other hand, I have to admit, I thought it was pretty funny.
It is funny, and it's touched upon the future issue.
Issue number 43, Matt, it's Nights Past Part 1. It's focused on Batgirl and Robin. What goes down?
A really cool cover Silver Age looking Batgirl and everybody running in the front. I liked it. But so when the death of Jason Todd is investigated by social services, Oracle reflects on her previous adventures with the fallen Robin. Bob, the best part of this issue is Jason Todd smoking a cigarette.
Did you prefer water skiing Batgirl or did you prefer Sig blasting Jason Todd?
Oh, Sig blasting Jason Todd. That is my favorite.
I feel like this wasn't the first time. We saw Jason Todd smoke in the late 80s, right?
Probably, but this is the first time I've seen it in modern times. It's just hilarious.
And this very much does feel like a piece of Scott Beatty's year one flashback work. You could imagine them doing Jason Todd final year or something and having this a part of it. And, you know, even though I didn't have that much to say about it, the interactions between Barbara and Jason Todd are good. I really do like her saying to Jason Todd, "Hush your tweeting now, little bird," which is very funny on its own terms. And then the fact that this is post-Hush makes it pretty funny. And then the fact that this is pre-Twitter, but now it means something else also is really funny.
And I do want to point out too, Bob, when we do have all these scenes take place in the Batcave, we see Batman's giant penny. So he got it back. Well, issue number 44.
Part two for Nights Past, Body of Evidence. What goes down, Matt?
Batman reflects on the death of Jason Todd and he uncovers new evidence.
So, Matt, at any point during this story, did you think Batboy, who's hiding out in the Batcave, might be resurrected Jason Todd?
Never, not once, Bob. Not as a kid, not now, not ever.
But, Matt, it was post-Hush.
No, Bob. I did not think that Jason Todd had been turned into little man Batboy. Did you like the retelling of Jason's last few minutes at the beginning of the issue? The way they did it.
I didn't have a strong feeling.
So they've gone back to that well one too many times.
Although I don't think they'd gone back to the well quite as often at this point as they have now hit after the resurrection.
The only area of art I really want to point out, Bob, is on page 17. We do have the Burton Batmobile.
It's funny. Yeah.
All right, Bob. Issue 45, Fathers and Sons, part three. We find out that Man-Bat's kid has been hanging out in the Batcave while social service interviews the Bat family concerning Bruce's fitness as a parent.
It's an interesting plot. I don't know that it was necessary to do the social worker thing here, but I get why Scott Beatty feels like he needs to fill it in. So given that he felt like he had to fill it in, it wasn't an uninteresting story.
There's that word about Gotham Knights again, Bob. Necessary. Or these think necessary. Do we really need someone follow it up on Jason Todd's death?
It's super necessary that we see the investigation of Jason Todd years after he died and that we see Batman adopt Dick Grayson once Dick Grayson is an adult.
All right, Bob. Issue 46, Scared Straight.
This is another little fill-in issue. This time it's about the reformed Spook. Matt, do you have any thoughts on the Spook as a villain?
Not really, Bob. I like the issue just because of what it was trying to portray. A criminal trying to change their ways, but then it's really difficult to do that. In the end, they just go back to jail.
This does give, like, Batman the sadist is the poor Spook. He just can't reform.
Interesting filler issue. Issue 47, Bob.
Part one, King of the Mountain, Matt. What goes down in King of the Mountain?
Well, Bob, Bane goes on a crusade to tie up any loose ends in Gotham, and he searches for his father.
Yeah, and I'm just got to say, I really lose sympathy for my boy Bane when he goes after my guy Scarface like he does.
He really does. Bane is frozen in the ice at the beginning, or like frozen to death at the beginning of this. He's gone on this long-ass journey to find his father now that he knows that he and Bruce are not brothers. So you really find a lot about Bane's lineage in Gotham Knights.
In issue number 48, Veritas Liberat, part two, family reunion. What goes down, Matt?
So Bane tells his father about his history while Bruce lets Cassie fly the plane. And I will say that I always loved the cover of this issue, and I felt like it could have been like the cover of a video game or a novel, the way it has that look to it.
Matt really likes lightning and mountaintops.
Yeah, a giant mask of Bane in the clouds with Batman and his weird pose. It was a good cover.
Matt, we find out that Bane is the son of Kingsnake, who I think neither of us take very seriously, but I think is a character that Chuck Dixon, Scott Beatty's co-writer, created and really likes. And so I guess in that sense, I don't think Beatty or Dixon see it as such a downgrade as we do, but I don't know. I guess, what do you feel about Bane being Kingsnake's son? Also, does Bane hugging Kingsnake seem wrong to you?
Yeah, it really does. Even though it's like a bear hug, it's still wrong.
Can Bane do any type of hug other than a bear hug?
He's a big, burly man. I remember having issues with Kingsnake being his dad, but mainly I just didn't feel like I needed to know who Bane's dad was. Why does Bane have to have a famous father? Why can't it just be some crook or criminal that was in prison?
That weird aristocracy monarchy that some adventure characters get into. Oh, well, Indiana Jones is coming to an end. Let's see the adventures of Indiana Jones' son sort of thing.
Not my favorite. And I will say, I think that Kingsnake being his father was a letdown, but at the same time, I don't know who they would have gone with that would have been better. I can't think of anyone.
Honestly, I would have preferred they have not done the plot at all, but, and I don't know that I really want Bane to be Batman's half-brother, but you got to admit that Thomas Wayne being his father is more interesting than Kingsnake.
They wouldn't have gone with Ra's al Ghul. That would have been the only other one I could think of.
Well, they couldn't do that because of legacy. That's weird. I got to say, Matt, it comes up in issue 48, Huntress working for Checkmate. I did not remember her stint for Checkmate at all. You didn't have that initial Huntress Checkmate. And I don't know if you had this issue or not, but I just didn't remember Huntress working for Checkmate.
Well, I had this issue for sure. I did not have the two Huntress issues that focused on her with Checkmate, but I did feel like Checkmate was a revolving door at the time. Every second had Batman character somehow would fit into Checkmate somehow.
I feel like you're disrespecting some of my favorite characters like Mr. Terrific and Huntress and to a lesser extent Sasha Bordeaux, but I'm just going to let it drift.
Mr. Terrific will make his on-screen debut soon in the Superman film. Don't worry. He's still relevant.
He's more relevant than he's ever been, Matt. More relevant than he's ever been. Issue number 49, Veritas Liberat, Part 3, Redeemer. What goes down in Part 3, Redeemer, Matt?
So after taking on the Culver cultists, Bane is shot by his father, Kingsnake, and uses the Lazarus Pit to resurrect himself.
Yeah, and so this is a fill-in artist. Charlie Adlard does this issue, replacing Roger Robinson. And you may know Charlie Adlard from his work on The Walking Dead, where he took over that book pretty early and was the main artist for it.
We're introduced to some kind of robot bob called Servitor. Became my new favorite thing. It's just funny to me that Kingsnake has a big-ass robot down there in his cult headquarters. Everything. He's got a Lazarus Pit, Servitor, cult guys that follow him with his magic words.
Yeah, it really is. Now that you put it together like that, I wasn't paying that much attention to it, but now that you put it together, it really is doing Kingsnake as like Bush League Ra's al Ghul, huh?
Oh, yeah, for sure. And did you forget that Bane was shot in the back and placed in Lazarus Pit? I completely forgot about this. It really is just the last couple of pages for the listeners. I mean, oh, okay. He's good now, apparently, and his insanity has been cleansed. Do you remember where he went after this?
Weirdly, I didn't expect this to stick, but I think it basically stuck. I think the next time we really see Bane is the Secret Six series that Gail Simone did, and it's not exactly cognizant with this. I think tonally, Gail Simone writes Bane in a fairly different way than Scott Beatty, but the basic thrust is still continued of, in Secret Six, Bane's an anti-hero, more or less.
I remember reading the issues early on when they dropped, but I haven't revisited
well,
them.
You had the Villains United series, which led into Secret Six, and I don't think Bane was in Villains United, although maybe I'm wrong. But did you actually read the Secret Six series that Simone did after Infinite Crisis?
I want to say I did, but a lot of it's getting confusing because I've read so much where Bane has been part of Suicide Squad that I'm probably getting confused.
Secret Six is the Suicide Squad without the Suicide Squad gimmick, if that makes
Correct.
Sense. People really love the Secret Six series. I didn't fully love it when I was reading it back in the day. It never fully clicked with me. I've liked some other Gail Simone stuff a lot more. But I wouldn't be hostile to revisiting it for the podcast.
Yeah, I might pull up a couple of the issues and give them a read and just see if it's something I want to cover. You should see where Bane goes from here because I can't remember off the top of my head.
They really stress him becoming, does this ring a bell that he becomes a paternal figure for Vandal Savage's daughter?
Yes, I do remember that. And he also starts to have a relationship with Harley Quinn at some point, or is that?
That may well happen, but I don't think that's in Secret Six. But maybe I'm wrong. My memory is not the best.
All right, Bob. Do we need to rank these in our comics?
We do. So right now we got a 9-item list. I'm not going to run down the whole thing, but Fantastic Four by John Hickman and Steve Epting is at the top. Right now, Gotham Knights by Devin Grayson and Roger Robinson is at the bottom, even though I don't think that's a very bad comic at all. I think it's pretty good. It's just got some bad choices in it. Matt, I assume you're comfortable slotting this in at number 10 after Devin Grayson and Roger Robinson, Gotham Knights?
Yes, that was going to be my suggestion. I didn't know if I was going to have to fight you there to put it one above. I'd definitely be at the bottom of everything we've read so far. Not saying bad, just saying compared to the other things we've read, it's not the best.
In my memory, I would have said this was much, much worse than the Devin Grayson run on Gotham Knights. Actually, revisiting it, I don't know that I would go so far as to say it's much, much worse, but I do think it doesn't have the highs of the Devin Grayson run for sure.
And also say revisiting all this and reading it as a whole and not as individual issues like I did a long time ago, month to month, that it really changes the perspective because you have the whole story all there together. I've had to learn to start doing that with comics because the week-to-week thing is just not the best way to, in my opinion, to read these long-term stories.
No, I really think you're right. And I do think if you imagine this taking literally over a year to go, that makes it more explicable why we didn't like it so much as children. Right.
And we were also spending our own money on it. Or at least I was.
You were. I didn't spend any money on it.
My $4 or my $3, whatever it was. I was saving up my little bit of money that I had as a kid to buy these issues. And then I find out, like, the stupid story about Bane as Batman's brother. What? This is so stupid. Like, that in my head, I think, probably affected my opinion of the comic. But as an adult, reading the entirety of the series, what's an effect on me? Yeah, that's okay. And also reading some of the stuff that comes afterward, it's so much worse. At least in my opinion.
Yeah, because you've gone ahead to the AJ Lieberman run.
Hey, well, not even the Lieberman run. I'm just thinking of, like, where Bane has gone in the future with all the things that we've seen Bane in, City of Bane, all that stuff. Come on.
City of Bane's pretty okay. I don't feel like strong. I think it's better than this.
That's the thing. If we compare them, they didn't go as low as we thought they did back then. There's still room for them to still make mistakes with these characters.
I'm willing to grant that there have been much worse Bane comics. I just don't know what they are. I would say Secret Six, even though it's not my cup of tea, way better than this. And I don't think it's all-time great Batman comics, but there's a lot to like in City of Bane. And certainly Tom King's arc where he basically does Arkham Asylum, Serious House on Serious Earth, the Grant Morrison, Dave McKean graphic novel, but he does it with Bane instead of Batman. Oh God, that rules so hard. I love that issue or issues.
All right, Bob, so next episode, what are we going to be looking at?
Okay, we're going to keep doing our exploration of the Hush saga, listeners, which, if you'd forgotten, was the whole point of this. I just thought it would be interesting for us to revisit these earlier Gotham Knights comics first, just to see what we had to say about them. But we're going into the AJ Lieberman run on Gotham Knights. We're going to split it up, I think, into two episodes. So the first episode, we're going to cover issues 50 to 55 and 59 to 66 of Gotham Knights. And then I think we're going to wrap it out with a second episode that covers issues 67 to 74 of Gotham Knights. Does that sound right to you, Matt?
Sounds good to me, Bob. And let me say this, folks. If you're planning on reading Hush 2 that is supposed to drop at the end of this month, I suggest you go back and you read the original Hush 2 that AJ Lieberman wrote in Gotham Knights, just to get your palate ready.
Get your body ready. Well, Matt, I guess can you answer the most important question for all of the Batman fans out there in radio land? Matt, is Alfred in Hush Return?
I don't know, Bob. Hush.
And you just read it and you don't remember.
Hush Returns by AJ Lieberman. I thought you meant Hush 2. I bet Alfred makes an appearance in Hush 2, probably a Clayface. But in Hush Returns, yes, Bob, Alfred is in Hush Returns 20.
All right.
Do not worry. You will see plenty of Alfred because, you know, he's a very important character to Batman, Bob.
All right. So to actually go out on, so it's not just me being a dick to you. How many characters in Jeff Loeb and Jim Lee's Hush 2 Hawktua, how many characters will actually be Clayface? I'm putting my money down on 3.
Damn it. You have my number. 3 is the artist number, Bob.
To make it more interesting, you take 3, I'll take 2. How does that sound?
That works. All right, Bob.
All right. Well, listeners, join us next week for the original Hawktua Hush 2 Hush Returns. This has been Uncanny Treks. I'm Bob in Cascadia. That's Matt in the Southland.
Thanks for listening.